Okay, hey everybody, it's Katie Kimball from Kitchen Stewardship, and I am here with Jade Coyle, who is an American farmer growing a very interesting variety of grain that I cannot wait to talk with you about. I feel like this is kind of the up-and-coming grain being a little bit mysterious here so that we can get you into it. So we're going to be talking with Jade about einkorn. And first off, I want to start with the obvious question. Because not everyone has heard of einkorn. What is einkorn?
Well, hi, Katie. The big thing with einkorn that I think would the best way to explain it is, a lot of the wheat that we're eating today, in contrast to einkorn, is the result of thousands of years of natural process that happens out there in the wild of plants mixing with each other, and then on top of it, a pretty intense period of, I guess, hybridization with these plants in recent years. And
Yeah.
so when you go back to the story of how did wheat come about? Where did it start? In looking at the genetic history of wheat, what's going on is there were varieties of grasses that began to cross. And one of those is like a wild rye grass that seemed to have been the start of wheat. And when that wild rye crossed with grass, it formed a 14 chromosome wheat. And that wheat is known as einkorn. And that was the first wheat per se that, as far as any data we have discovered or plants that we have access to today, the first plant that contained the gluten in it at a level that it would have rise in the bread. And but einkorn isn't like modern wheat. The big difference between it is that it's a primitive form of wheat. It's the most primitive form of wheat we have on Earth. And the gluten structure of einkorn is what really makes it different. It contains only the A chromosome, whereas modern wheat contains the D chromosome, and the presence of the D chromosome came thousands of years later. Einkorn would have come about around five. They're saying 5 to 10,000 years ago. It's unclear just when in that period it happened. There are archaeological evidences of einkorn. For example, the famous ice mummy that was found in the Appalachians. Otzi is his name. Otzi was somehow on a trip or something up in the mountains and somehow received a wound. There's an arrowhead found in his shoulder, and then he was mummified in this ice. Anyway, so they discovered him years ago in the 90s, and they've done a lot of studies, and they found einkorn in his digestive tract. They found einkorn on the cuff of his pants,
Oh, wow.
and so he may have just barely been eating when this happened. They don't. There's been a lot of dramatizations of what happened in his final moments, but the point being that around that time, those people were eating it, and there's an ancient civilization in the area of Turkey and Iraq called Sumer, and it's considered the first. It's considered the birthplace of agriculture. So rather than just letting plants be out in the wild, this is the first archaeological evidence that we have of a civilization that began, caring for animals, nurturing plants, and raising them as for the purpose of, growing it for their family or their loved ones. I tend to believe that there's probably other evidence otherwhere that we haven't discovered yet, but Sumer is the first one that we've discovered. And in there in Turkey and Iraq, you see the history of wheat actually begin. And so it begins there with einkorn. And einkorn, like I said, has 14 chromosomes, and every time it hybridizes, which grains naturally do out in the wild, they hybridize. They form a new variety.
Okay.
And they develop more chromosomal pairs, so they'll bring in another set of chromosomes. And so when you look back at, okay, what is einkorn? The biggest thing that you see in how it's different than modern wheat and the story of how modern wheat developed from there is einkorn had a parent of rye, like I was saying, that crossed with the grass. Well, it seems that same rye also crossed with another grass, and that formed an ancient wheat called emmer. So they were like, I guess, cousins, you could say.
Sure, yeah.
Emmer is different. That I'm going to be. If you look up the taxonomy of wheat, I always use this as my reference. But the taxonomy of wheat is that the chromosomal makeup of wheat, and so there's three real differentiating factors when you look at what makes an ancient wheat. You've got einkorn, which is what they call a diploid species containing 14 chromosomes, and then all the Durham wheats like emmer, Khorasan, or which is also known as Kamut. These would have crossed with a cousin of einkorn that was already a diploid, crossing with another diploid and forming a tetraploid. And the tetraploids, like I said, include emmer, Khorasan, Kamut. And then from there, they would have hybridized again to form spelt. Spelt as an ancient wheat, but speaking of it in terms of its genetic makeup, spelt is more similar to modern wheat because it contains 42 chromosomes, speaking to, you know, how much hybridization it's been through. Now, obviously, spelt is ancient. It was used in Roman times. And so we have history of spelt many, many years ago. And so most of the modern day focus around wheat has been based on the cousin of einkorn and its predecessors, which is emmer. So the story, I guess, between all that is einkorn kind of set it off on its own. It remained in its diploid state, its 14 chromosome state. It remained in the wild out there. And the U.S. government in the early 50s and 60s, or 40s and 50s, they sent groups of scientists out to gather these seeds throughout, you know, Turkey and Asia and Iraq, Afghanistan, and they gathered all these different seeds and then brought them and they studied them, not only their taxonomy and their genetic makeup, but also their other properties. And they brought home over 300 varieties of einkorn. All of them are diploid species, 14 chromosome wheat. But they have a lot of different characteristics. And today in our modern agriculture, farmers have continued to propagate einkorn. But only recently did it begin to happen in the United States. I came across it in 2009. And then our family has grown it here on our farm. My dad grew it for me on his farm. And we've got a network of other farmers growing it for us. But today there are probably, out of those 300 varieties, you can go to the seed bank and they can tell you about the 300 varieties of einkorn. But there's probably 10 of them that are actually in commercial production today. And the commercial production of einkorn is obviously very limited. But the exciting thing about it, I think, is that we're beginning to understand through studies that einkorn has some possibilities for people, health-wise, because maybe it's, you know, genetic makeup, it's primitive nature. Anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, just to summarize, so rye by itself isn't able to hold yeast and like rise to make nice bread, but when it crossed with this grass, einkorn's like the first grain then that would make bread as we know it and not a flat, more of a pita bread. And then somehow it was preserved from hybridization, which is kind of fascinating. And my next question for you, because that when, I don't know, my eyes got really big when you said spelt had 42, I think you said, chromosomes, and einkorn only had 14. And here I've always thought of spelt as an ancient weed, and it is, or an ancient grain, but that's a lot of hybridizations, which also I want to point out to people that hybridization is a natural process. And I think people get that fairly mixed up with genetic modification, which is not a natural process. So that's really, really important to point out to people that hybridization does happen naturally. It can be also human intervened, right? We can help things hybridize in the way we want them to, but it's a completely different process than genetic modification. Either way, einkorn is like somehow preserved. Do we even know like why einkorn didn't increase in chromosomes and just kind of like disappear as a species?
Well, you know, I was really curious about this myself, and I sought out some scientists on it who could advise me on that, because I wanted to understand, for example, if I plant einkorn a field, is it important that I have a buffer between that and maybe a neighbor's field a half mile away that has weed in it, right? Is there a potential issue with hybridization there? And so I looked into, you know, who'd be the best person to speak about this, and I found a scientist named Carol Mallory Smith, who, I believe that's her name, I believe I got that right, but she is the scientist in Oregon who discovered the GMO wheat in a farmer's field. And this was a very big deal. I think in 2013 is when it happened, because GMO wheat is not allowed in the United States. It's not legalized. It would be a major issue if GMO could not be exported. And in fact, what happened was this farmer sprayed this wheat with Roundup and the wheat didn't die. And he thought, well, that's weird. So he took it into Carol, and she said, she did a study on it, and she said, this is GMO wheat. Where did this come from? He said, it was just growing right here in my field. I don't know how that happened. And anyway, so I called her to ask her some questions, because I thought this lady probably knows what she's talking about. And I wanted to find out, you know, what are the chances of einkorn hybridizing? Is that something that could happen with wheat nearby? And she cleared up some things about GMO wheat that, you know, this was a very big event, this event that happened there in Oregon in 2013. And it actually shut down U.S. exports of wheat for a few days while they verified that there were no problems with GMO wheat in the U.S. And this was just a kind of a blip, some strange happening, but it did bring a lot of concern about GMO wheat. But the point that, and the reason I interviewed her was I wanted to find out, okay, so does einkorn have susceptibility to hybridization? And she says, well, it's been in nature for thousands of years and it has not hybridized. The chances of it hybridizing are extremely, extremely, extremely low. And she said, I wouldn't even be concerned about planting it right next to wheat. She said for wheat to cross-pollinate, it is, you know, if two fields of different varieties of wheat are next to each other, they will naturally cross-pollinate because they have similar genetic makeup. But einkorn and wheat sitting next to each other in the field are very different. And I've got some examples of that. So this, this right here, it, hopefully you can see this, is a head of hard red wheat, hard red spring wheat.
Okay. So that's your normal whole wheat flour and all-purpose flour in the grocery.
Yeah. And then you put that next to the einkorn. This is some einkorn that grew in our field last year. And you can see how you may have even seen heads similar to this in. Hopefully that's coming through, but that's quite a distinction that you see between them visually. Mm-hmm. And what she was saying was that einkorn and wheat are not going to hybridize. They see a lot of merit to einkorn with its ability to resist rust disease and other attributes that make it desirable. And so they're trying to do breeding programs with Einkorn and Modern Wheat, you know, to try to see if they can bring out, well, they have to that breeding process is very, very involved because they have to bring those forward from Einkorn to catch up with the wheat so that they can breed them. And I don't understand it all, but this one scientist in at Utah State University is explaining it to me. But his point is Einkorn has a lot of desirable characteristics that they want to try to figure out how to breed with modern wheat. And it sounds to me like that's something that they're pursuing. And our goal as a farm is to preserve Einkorn. We actually have two different types of Einkorn that we grow. And one is a spring Einkorn. So we plant it in the spring and harvest it in the fall. And then the other is a fall Einkorn. We plant it in the fall and harvest it in the fall. And so we have these two varieties that we have been working with and caring for, and we plan to continue to do so. And in that way, and in the same way that seeds have been preserved through thousands of years, as we continue to grow them, we preserve, you know, the seed sources for those and develop the seed sources so that we can propagate them and increase the acreage on those seed sources. What we're doing is helping to preserve Einkorn, but also making it available for people to use in their homes, which when we started in 2009 wasn't a possibility. And it's been a long, slow road, but I feel like people are catching on and they're starting to see the merits of it. And I'll just make a note here on that. When a farmer grows Einkorn, it's not a very exciting crop to grow. Just that same visual comparison that I did earlier, in the size of the heads, the amount of grain coming from one head of Einkorn versus hard red spring wheat, the yields are very different. You know, Einkorn's probably around 20 to 25%, and it has additional processing steps that need to be taken, higher shipping costs because of the lower density of it. Anyway, a lot of factors that make it for a farmer a difficult crop. But we're committed to it, and we have a lot of just wonderful people who are supporting us and helping us to keep it going. And one day we hope that we can make it available, you know, widely available other than, you know, just through our website. But as a farmer, we have really found, a passion in preserving this Einkorn.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And we'll definitely make sure
that's beautiful.
You know, that we link to the website so that people can find your Einkorn site. You mentioned that there are qualities that scientists are seeing as desirable in Einkorn, and they're actually trying to improve modern wheat by taking it back to Einkorn. What are some of these qualities that are desirable in Einkorn? And then would it be wise, or why might it be wise, for someone who's already baking with whole wheat flour and enjoying it to perhaps experiment with Einkorn?
Yeah, so the qualities that are desirable in Einkorn range from agricultural to baking to nutritional. And so I'll just touch on each of those and their different aspects of it. From an agricultural standpoint, rust disease is the largest threat we have to our food supply today. And what rust disease is it develops inside of the plant. And if you see it on a plant, it just kind of takes the head of wheat and it grows around it, and it looks scary. It looks like a Frankenstein. And it's like a fungus, basically, that develops on wheat. And in fields where this has happened, they've had to destroy the wheat. They couldn't harvest it. They have to not take any equipment in there, or equipment that has been in there has to be sanitized. And so they don't spread this rust to other areas, because if it were to go widespread, we would lose our food supply. And that's obviously a huge threat to all of us. And so a lot of wonderful researchers are working on the prevention of rust disease and basically mitigating our risks to being losing our food supply over rust disease. And so Einkorn, as I mentioned, has a role in that. From a baking standpoint, the biggest reason people bake with Einkorn from a truly just baker's experience is the flavor. And Einkorn has a rich, nutty flavor to it, which anybody who tests with different types of grains, from oats to rye to different types of wheat or barley. You know that every grain has its kind of own unique fingerprint in terms of flavor and smell, aroma. And einkorn definitely has its own, and it's very desirable. We have a lot of high-end restaurants and bakeries that use einkorn just solely for the flavor. Oh, cool. My favorite way to have einkorn is actually a tortilla. Thin and, almost not quite, it's still a little bit of flexibility to it, but the edges, are like a cracker. I just love einkorn that way because it brings out the flavor when you bake it like that. And it's very popular for example, you take the whole grain einkorn, put a little oil, like avocado oil, in the bottom of the pan and some salt, and pour your einkorn in, and then heat it up and let it pop, almost like you would pop popcorn in a pan, but they won't visually turn white. You'll just hear them just subtly pop, and then use that on a salad, for example. Really delicious. The flavor is just amazing. And so from a culinary standpoint, it's definitely attractive from a flavor. And then third is nutrition and digestion. So when you look at einkorn, it has higher lutein, so I'm listing some of the antioxidants that it has higher values of, I guess you could say. So the presence of the antioxidants in einkorn is evident in, it has kind of a yellow tint to it if you bake with it. And those are just indications of the high antioxidants in it. It also has a higher protein profile, and that would normally speak to a better baking quality for bread. But einkorn doesn't make as good a bread as like a high protein hard red spring wheat. It's not going to have the same rise. Mm-hmm. In our family, I give credit to my wife. She has worked so hard on this. And if I showed you loaves of our einkorn bread, you'd be amazed. They're beautiful, tall, have a nice rise. Delicious bread, and she's figured that out. But it's not going to be as easy to bake with as a bread wheat, right? But it has the gluten in it, and if you don't over mix it, if you don't over knead it, because it is not a strong gluten, and those things will break it down, over activate the gluten, then you can make a really nice bread. And we typically do, we mix it up in the mixer, and we don't do a lot of folding or kneading beyond that. And so it's kind of a low knead or no knead sort of a bread that we make. But probably the biggest reason people go to einkorn is from the digestive aspect of it. It because it's the most primitive form of wheat, it seems to somehow have attributes that are desirable, and in labs they've studied it, and they've found that it has a lower toxicity than modern wheat, and so it has possibilities for sufferers of celiacs, they say. But we always recommend that people who have celiac disease don't consume gluten, of course, and they work with their doctor, because that's a very difficult disease that's still being understood and should not have gluten of any kind in it. Right. But having said that, we do have people who have serious digestive issues and allergies to gluten who can consume einkorn, and they say it's the only wheat that they can eat. And so that's probably the number one reason that people would say, hey, I'm going to try this einkorn, as far as a consumer goes. And then the other nutritional benefits of it, the high protein, the antioxidants, vitamin A, those all stand out as nutritional benefits in einkorn.
Sure thing. So do you sell just the whole grains, or can you get the flour too if this is something that someone decides they want to try?
Yeah, we offer both on our website. The goal for us is to help as many people as possible to not only begin using their einkorn in their kitchen, but also begin the experience of working closely with a farmer so that there's fewer steps that have to happen in the process of you eating your food, right? We see this in the farmers markets. You know, farmers bring their foods to the market, and you get your eggs or your vegetables from the farmer, and you're talking about very fresh, right? And grains have a similar aspect to them, where a lot of times when we consume, say, crackers from the store or breads from the store, these grains have gone from the farmer to, you know, maybe an elevator where they're cleaned and processed and then removed from there to a mill. And the mill then ships them to a packaging place, and the packaging co-pack them and make the ingredients and then ship it to a distribution place and then the store. By that time, it's old, it's lost nutrition. Even if you buy a bag of the flour off the shelf of the store, it's similar. It's old, it's lost a lot of its nutritional value. So when you buy the Einkorn flour from our website, we're working on, and later this year, we will have a freshly milled Einkorn flour that you can buy from us, which means when you, it hasn't been milled yet, and then we'll ship it to you. But even better than that is that we ship you the berries and you mill it yourself. And there are, you know, a number of mills out there that you can use for milling your own grain. And we recommend that people pursue that, because as a farmer, our ideal is we harvest the grain, we clean it, we package it, and we ship it to you. And then you get the most out of it by milling it, and you get the most nutrition out of it by milling it and using it as you need it. And we definitely do sell the flour, but I always emphasize that we hope people will buy the berries, because it's going to be best for them if they do.
Sure, and that's what we're really going to be talking about in the next month and a half or so, is getting back to basics and milling whole grains, and kind of explaining what the mock mill is and how I've been experimenting with that. Lots of Einkorn experiments. I might have to get your tortilla and bread recipes out of you, because we did make tortillas the other day and trying just to use my normal recipe, and they were delicious. Like, I had one with butter on it just to get the flavor, you know, and all I could think was, is this is going to be amazing with cheese and salsa, you know, just that savory idea. They were a little stiff, so I'll be curious to maybe test yours and see if they're more pliable, or, I mean, they were great for quesadillas though. Nice and flat. Now, I was looking up a little bit on Einkorn and just, you know, Wikipedia, right, in all its wisdom. And it was interesting, because pretty emphatically, yes, Wikipedia says that Einkorn is not good for bread baking. I think what you're saying is that people need to just learn how to use it, just like you learn to use different tools in your house in different ways. You don't use a Phillips head the same way you use a flathead screwdriver, right? So what are some kind of shifts that people would need to do to bake with Einkorn or cook with Einkorn? Do you have to have special Einkorn recipes, or can we like adapt our favorite family recipes and try them with Einkorn? What do we need to do there?
Yeah, we found that we can adapt them by changing the liquid. And so I'll talk a little bit about that, but we typically bake in our family with sourdough, and whether you do or don't, it doesn't change what I'm about to say, but when we began using Einkorn, we noticed that, you know, you add the starter to a bowl with a little bit of water and flour, and then in the morning you add that starter to, you know, your larger batch of bread that you're baking. And we noticed that when we switched from hard red spring wheat to, or actually we were using hard white, We switched from hard white spring wheat to Einkorn, that starter would go through that little bowl of flour faster. And so we took our sourdough baking process and moved it a lot shorter. Instead of it taking a full day, it took about a half of a day. And I don't know if that speaks to its digestibility. I don't know what that means exactly, but it definitely changes the way that we bake with it a little bit. That's one point. But overall, the biggest change that we've noticed is when you bake, you need to reduce the water. It requires less water to hydrate the Einkorn. And so let's say you're making a bread and you have your normal bread recipe. If you buy our all-purpose Einkorn flour and use that in place of, let's say, a bread flour, the biggest change you're going to need to make is reducing the amount of water that you use by 30 up to 50%, depending if it's, you know, if you're using honey or eggs and different factors that will go into your recipe. But I recommend starting by reducing the flour by 30%. And you'll notice that it's still stickier than the dough you're used to. But don't be put off by the stickiness, like a very nice loaf. We have a loaf there on our website, a recipe using our all-purpose flour. It's a beautiful, tall loaf of einkorn made from our all-purpose flour, conventional yeast, and it made a beautiful loaf. But even with that, the rise time on it was lower than it was with regular bread flour. So in general, I think reducing the liquid is going to be the main modification you need to make. And there's a temptation, because it's so sticky, to just keep adding more flour. But if you do that, obviously you're going to, you're going to set off your flavor profile if you just keep adding flour, and you're going to make it more dense. And so you'll be dealing with a little bit stickier dough and less water.
Okay, very interesting. You know, when people are buying flour, there's kind of all these rules and layers that they need to learn. Like, oh, wait, what does all-purpose mean compared to whole wheat? It means that the bran and the germ are taken out along with most of the nutrition. And, you know, and then there's bromated and bleaching and, you know, all these things. Are there any techniques to buying einkorn flour or grains or things to watch for? Or is it pretty pure at this point because processing hasn't really gotten into it?
Yeah. Well, if you buy an organic flour, which ours is, you're avoiding what I call toxic additives that are used to make it extra white. We don't call ours a white einkorn flour. If you look at it, it is generally white. But if you look at it next to a bleached white flour, ours will look actually kind of yellow. But it is generally speaking a white flour, but it's not bromated or nothing is done to added to it other than we just mill it and we extract the bran and the germ. Now, other brands out there, as far as I know, if they're organic, you're going to get the same product in terms of the additives, as long as it's organic. But I will just make a comment on the different types of einkorn that are out there. As I mentioned, there are 300 varieties, probably 10 in commercial production. The major brands of einkorn on the market include Jovial, which most people may be familiar with in their stores. You can buy Jovial in the whole grain berry or in they've got an all-purpose flour. Mm-hmm. And their variety of einkorn is different than ours. And so if you bake with theirs and bake with ours, you'll notice a difference.
Okay. And, so that is a little tricky because you can't just look up an einkorn recipe necessarily and have it always behave the same. That's very interesting. I know when I first started looking into einkorn a number of years ago, probably 5 years ago, I just assumed that, einkorn's an ancient wheat, therefore einkorn flour will be whole grain because that's how it should work. And so I was really surprised to then kind of discover, like, oh, wait, when you buy the flour, in general, it's not whole grain. It's been refined a little bit. And, you know, obviously that does make for lighter baked goods, and it's still better than your basic all-purpose flour. But it was a surprise to me. I was like, oh, this isn't, isn't actually whole grain. But
Yeah, and it's, as you look at, you know, what you're going to use in your baking, most of the einkorn, I mean, you're not going to notice the difference between anybody's einkorn, whether it's Jovial's or ours. But what you will notice is if you're making a loaf of bread, the type of a loaf that you can make is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. I think that Jovial has like a, if you were to compare the seeds side by side, Jovial's and ours, you would see that ours is a slightly smaller seed and it has a darker color to it. Okay. And if you looked at Jovial's in the head, like this one here, ours has a dark, it has a black look to it. The awns are black. And and jovials would be blonde. It wouldn't have the blackness to it. So there's a difference in the varieties of einkorn. And we have a lot of people who, pizza shops and whatnot that buy our einkorn, because a donut shop in New York, that they buy ours because they can make, they can get a better rise out of it.
So. Okay, that is interesting. That's good to know. I'm excited to maybe even try the bread. It's been a long time since I've baked bread with gluten, so I'm not even used to it anymore.
Oh boy. Yeah, well, it's worth trying. And just the flavor alone, I think, is worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done biscuits and tortillas so far, and they really are rich in flavor. And, you know, sometimes you eat like a whole wheat bread and people say, well, how is it? And you say, it tastes healthy. And I don't think of that exact same reaction with the einkorn. It just tastes robust. Like, it is hard to explain. You say nutty, and you're right. But it's like, it's really hard to explain like what something tastes like to someone, you know? So I think this is going to be fabulous. We're going to definitely be sharing some einkorn recipes. What my audience said they wanted when I said, well, what should we do? And I like experiment with milling with the muck mill and einkorn and stuff. And people weren't as into like, let's do a bunch of einkorn recipes. What they wanted to see was, let's make pizza crust with, you know, whole wheat flour, gluten-free flours, and einkorn, all freshly ground. Let's make biscuits with like these three things. So I get to be like the crash test dummy of the kitchen here. And yeah, so that's what we'll be presenting over the next couple of weeks, is like how these different varieties of grains really differ.
Well, yeah, and as you get into that, you know, we're happy to help you. And there is, that's a big chore for you, because you have to get through a certain amount of experimentation before you can say, well, this is what it's like, right? And and that goes for gluten-free flours as well. I mean, they're just different. And I don't know what it is, but we could make the same thing over and over and over again, and it turns out it didn't seem like it. We had to experiment a little bit more with the rise times, like I've described, and some of those things to get it so that it worked the way that we wanted to. But ultimately, we've been very satisfied as a family. We use a lot of different grains in our baking and our foods. But when it comes to breads, we do everything with einkorn. We don't use modern wheat very much at all, if ever, because we found ways to do it all with einkorn.
Yeah. I mean, it's always cool to be able to do the same thing. Like, you're going to take the same amount of time to make your bread once you get the recipe down, and yet the nutrition's more. Like, who can argue with that, you know? Yeah. And it's easier to digest. Like, when there's all these added benefits, it's like, why not give it a shot and, you know, at least try to transfer your favorite recipes to einkorn, or try a new recipe, you know? It's kind of like, do you want to eat a spinach salad or an iceberg lettuce salad, right? Like, might as well at least mix them up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and like, you know, for example, just it's something as simple as a pie crust. We have a pie crust recipe on our website. It's a beautiful pie crust, because einkorn is really, it has this lightness to it. Like when you mill it, if you were to mill or even feel einkorn with a hard red spring wheat, einkorn's a lot softer, and it mills into a really fine, beautiful flour. And even a whole grain einkorn flour, when you mill it, has a white appearance to it. It's very light in color. And that works really well in, you know, treats, quick breads, waffles, pancakes. So not only can you make, you know, bread with it, but you can experiment with so many different things. And there's really nothing that you can't make with einkorn and be able to make very delicious brownies. I can't think of anything that we haven't been able to pour in, and anymore, it's just second nature. And that's mostly my wife who's the pro at that, because I can't take credit for it. She is amazing. And most of the recipes on the website, she has produced, and a lot of people take those and they adapt them, have their own recipes, and they start just learning how to, I don't know. I mean, they're figuring out how to do it. And I think it's well worth pursuing, because of the nutritional benefits, but also the flavor.
Ah, oh, now you made me want brownies because I'm just imagining that like robust einkorn flavor with the chocolate, and I'm not eating sugar right now because it's Lent, so that wasn't even very nice. But I do appreciate your time, and I so appreciate you being here. Well, and I have to say, like all of us at Kitchen Stewardship, I think have a great respect for farmers, and it's been an honor to get to talk to you just as a true American farmer, and not only, here growing food for people on your land, but even more so, like keeping the traditional foods alive and focusing on, how can we make things more nutritious and not just more quantity, which is, I think, the way a lot of farming has gone. And so we appreciate that from all of us at Kitchen Stewardship to you. What can you tell us where we can find you online, where we can find these grains?
It's einkorn.com, so it's nice and easy to find, but difficult to spell. Ein means one in German, so single grain, but Ein is EIN and then KORN, so einkorn.
Yeah, and we'll
So
make sure anywhere this
find us
video is
there.
that we.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm going to snitch the bread
we've
this
got a lot
everywhere.
of content. Good.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Jade, again from einkorn.com, growing einkorn here in America, keeping it real, keeping it basic, simple, more nutritious, and traditional. Thank you so very much for joining me.